You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. No David Ramil tonight, who is usually on the show with me, but he'll be back on the next episode. For now, you're stuck with me, and today we're talking about the Heat's loss to the Hornets. We'll get to some of your Twitter questions, but let's quickly sort of recap what happened tonight. After losing to the Kings on Monday, the Heat lost in the second game of their back-to-back, getting beat by the Hornets 125-113, and really, it wasn't even that close. They spent a lot of the second half down by 15-20 points. It had a similar feel to that Kings game where the Heat would get it to 10 and then couldn't quite narrow the gap much more than that. Now, I could do a deep dive into the game, tell you how Tony Parker torched Miami's backups how for 24 points and 11 assists, how Malik Monk hung 20 points on them, how Cody Zeller, of all people, outplayed basically every center on the Heat's roster. I could do that. I could dive into how all that happened, but you don't want to hear that. The real reason the Heat lost that game is the same reason why they lost to the Kings. They just got ran off the court in that game. Miami has made it a mission of theirs to, like the rest of the league, pick up their pace. But the Heat were already one of the slower teams in the league, so just picking up the pace at the same rate as the rest of the league isn't going to make you faster than the rest of the league. You're still going to be one of the slower teams even if you're playing faster than you did last year. And really, the Heat don't have the guys to play a lot faster. They don't have the shooters that you need to play a whole lot faster, even though they are taking a lot of threes, and I think that's the right way to go about it. But just like how the Kings were just faster, they were switching screens, they were doing all the things like that on defense, they were getting out into transition, getting easy buckets that way. Charlotte had 17 fast break points tonight versus 5 for Miami. It was the same formula, and I think the scouting report right now is out on the Heat. Now, I don't know that Charlotte necessarily went off of that scouting report. This is how they've been playing all season long. James Borrego came from the Spurs, took over for Steve Clifford, has been playing that way for the Hornets all season long. I actually really like what I've seen from Charlotte so far this season. They look like a really good team. Kemba Walker looks better than ever. He's pulling up from three-point range. He looks unstoppable. They're playing basically 10 deep, switching everything, playing fast. The only guy who plays more than 30 minutes for them consistently really is Kemba Walker. And everybody else there is kind of interchangeable. And that's really the difference when you think about that versus Miami. Miami, they went 10 deep tonight. They typically go 9 deep. I expect them to go 10 deep for the balance of the season once they start getting guys back from injuries like James Johnson. But they don't really have that guy that you really want to be playing 35 minutes a game like the Hornets play Kemba Walker. Now, they do that. They do that with guys like Josh Richardson or Roddy Magruder. But those aren't the workhorses. Those aren't the guys that you're riding off to in the sunset. Those aren't the guys that are going to get you a win when you need one. Kemba Walker is that. Josh Richardson could become that, but he's not that yet. He's not there yet. He doesn't do enough of all of the things that an alpha dog, a number one option for a winning team needs to do. Look at what Kemba Walker did tonight. 19 points on 6 of 14 shooting, 8 assists, made 4 of his 8 three-pointers, got to the line 4 times. Was it Kemba Walker's best game? No, it was probably one of his worst games of the season, but he's still efficient. Josh Richardson, 15 points on 13 shots. Goran Dragic, 9 points on 11 shots. Roddy Magruder, 13 points on 13 shots. None of these guys, even on a bad... Like, when Kemba Walker has a bad night, that's what that looks like. Still scores 19 points on 14 shots. Still makes half of his three-pointers. When Josh Richardson has a bad night, he's basically invisible. Right? And so that's where you're at if you're Miami. Besides just getting ran off the court, they didn't shoot well. They shot 47%, 39% from three-point range. Charlotte, you compare that to what the Hornets did, 54%. Now, you could maybe, just looking at the box score, you just chalk that up. Oh, well, the Hornets just had a good shooting night. Miami had a decent shooting night, but Charlotte had a better shooting night. Look, you're talking about how Charlotte played faster. They only had 81 field goal attempts. Miami had 87. They had more possessions out of it. But if you look at the shots that Charlotte was getting, they were wide open shots a lot of times. Great shots from three-point range. They got good looks. They got to the basket. They got the looks that they wanted. Their ball movement was good. I mean, Tony Parker, 11 assists. Kemba Walker, 8 assists. They were basically carving up Miami's defense, and that's because Miami had to switch and onto guys that were smaller than them. And they couldn't chase these guys around, and so the Hornets were able to spread things out, get to the rim, kick out to open shooters. It's no surprise that they made 46% of their three-point shots. They were open shots. They were good shots, in-rhythm shots. It's hard to beat them. And if you're Miami, if you're going to play big and you're going to try to be the slower, bigger, more physical team and basically grind the game down into the dirt and play the running game, so to speak, well, then you got to be effective at it. The Hornets out-rebounded the Heat tonight. The Hornets had 39 rebounds. Miami had 34. So how are you going to win that way? You can't win that way. Dwayne Wade, your best scorer, right? We talked about not having that guy that you could just sort of ride for an entire game. Dwayne Wade obviously used to be that guy. I don't need to tell you that. You know that. But he can't be that. He's basically limited to 24 to 25 minutes a game tonight, this season. That's what he's going to play all season long. 24 to 25 minutes a game. That's his limit. That's his minutes cap. That's what he's going to play all season long. And unfortunately, he was Miami's best scorer. 6 of 10 on his shots, scored 19 points. He was the only guy scoring efficiently for the Heat tonight. But he can't play more than 25 minutes a game. He just can't. Not at 36 years old. And so Dwayne Wade could be Tony Parker off the bench for you. Tony Parker, again, 24 points on 15 shots. Dwayne Wade, 19 points on 10 shots, just as good as a night as Tony Parker had. But Tony Parker was the second highest scorer on the team. Or I'm sorry, he had led the team in points, but really wasn't the main guy on the offense. Kemba Walker, the offense ran through him. Malik Monk went out there and hung 20 points on Miami. The Heat didn't have a single guy score 20 points tonight. Dwayne Wade could be the second or third option on any given night, the second or third best scorer on any given game, but he can't be the number one guy. And a lot of times this season, Josh Richardson has been that number one guy. But then again, a lot of times he hasn't been that guy. And I don't think he can be that guy consistently for an entire season. Not yet. I think he can get there, possibly get there. I think he can be probably the second best guy on a good team. I think he'd be the second best guy on a really good team. But he's not there right now. And if you want Miami to compete this season, they're going to need something more. They're going to need more than just Josh Richardson. They're going to need more than this ensemble cast. They're going to need to alter their strategy because I just don't know that this is it. I don't see this as it. Look, I predicted a 1-2 stretch here on last Friday's show and we guessed the record for the following week. I called this 1-2. I predicted this loss against Charlotte specifically. I think the Hornets are a bad matchup for them and that showed tonight. So, look, I think the Heat could have gotten back into the game but made a major mistake in the fourth quarter. I'll tell you what it is next after this quick break. So this is the part of our post-game show where we do what went right and what went wrong. And for this game, it was basically the same stuff as the last game for Sacramento, and we kind of already talked about that. But one thing continues to confuse me about this team, and it dates back to even last season, and that's why they don't go super small when they're down double digits late. And I tweeted about this during the game, and look, this team is deep with front court guys, right? You're starting Whiteside and Olynyk. You've got Bam Adebayo coming off the bench, and he's really versatile, and he's special. He's a special talent. And then you're going to have James Johnson coming back at some point, and he's a power forward. But I just don't understand why if you're down 20 points in the second half, most teams in the NBA, and the successful teams in the NBA, will use that opportunity to basically go super small and play what I call a catch-up lineup, where you basically play your best shooting big at center, and then just surround that guy with more shooters, right? And so why, if you're Miami, and you're down 20 in the second half to Charlotte, and you can't score for anything. You're having a hard time scoring all game long. Why not switch up the lineup? Why not play a catch-up lineup of Goran Dragic, Wayne Ellington, Dwayne Wade, Josh Richardson, and Justice Winslow at the five? We saw Winslow playing the five in the playoffs against the Raptors when he was a rookie. We really haven't seen it since. Maybe when James Johnson comes back, you play him in that spot, but you really can only play one of them. James Johnson's not available. There's no timetable on his return. Why not take this chance to play Justice Winslow at the five? Go super small. I already talked about how Cody Zeller outplayed all of Miami's centers, and he did. Cody Zeller was just a solid player for them tonight. Whiteside, you look minus 11 in the plus-minus. Kelly Olynyk, minus 3. Bam Adebayo was neutral. And maybe if you're Eric Spoelstra, you look at a guy like Olynyk and Adebayo and say, well, they're so versatile. They're like smalls in bigs' bodies. Okay, I get it. But Kelly Olynyk was, like, maybe you play him at the five and then just a bunch of shooters around him. Maybe that helps offensively, but defensively, he still can't keep up with that transition game that Charlotte's running. He can't keep up with the pace. He's not getting down the floor. Bam Adebayo does a better job of doing that, but doesn't give you enough offensively outside of what he could do at the rim. Like, look, I hear the argument, but you've got to at least try Justice Winslow at the five, right? Because he can handle the ball. He can get out and transition on both ends, right? He can grab a rebound and bring the ball down the floor against in an NBA game. We don't know if Bam Adebayo can necessarily do that yet. Kelly Olynyk could do that, but on the other end, on defense, he can't get back in transition. Winslow can do that. And then maybe you start playing a guy like Zeller off the floor, right? I can't believe I'm talking about Zeller like this. But if you're Miami and you're trying to play big and you're getting beat in the big game, well, then you got to go small. And I don't know why we haven't seen Spo try to do that. I suppose he's trying to lean into what he perceives as the strengths of this roster. But when the strengths aren't working, you got to try something different. And I'm surprised we haven't seen it. I don't think he needs to do it every game. I don't think this needs to be his quote-unquote death lineup. I don't think he needs to. Best case scenario, he never has to go to it. But if you're down by 20, and the only way to get back into the game is to make some shots and try to defend a switching transition team in Charlotte, well, then go small. Play your switchiest, most transitioniest lineup. Put Wayne Ellington in there, for God's sakes. I don't know why Wayne Ellington hasn't played. Spoelstra told reporters before the game that Wayne Ellington is in good shape. He's fine. His conditioning is fine. He's ready to play, but told them after the Kings game he just didn't have the minutes for Ellington. Just couldn't find him. Well, the minutes were here. The minutes were there tonight. We went back. We got a Twitter question after the Sacramento Kings game, after the Heat lost to the Kings on Monday night. We got a Twitter question. Why did they insist on playing Tyler Johnson over Wayne Ellington? And I said, well, Tyler Johnson actually played well against the Kings. So, like, I can defend it. It's weird. Maybe you try to insert Ellington somewhere else, but why specifically over Tyler Johnson? I get it. Tyler Johnson didn't play that well of a game tonight. Yeah, he had 12 points on 5-7 shooting, but defensively he got ripped apart by Tony Parker. He was a minus 8. I mean, he got ripped apart by Tony Parker. He was the main guy playing Tony Parker in the first and second half. He just got torched. Tony Parker just torched him. Wayne Ellington could just as easily get torched, but maybe he gives you a little bit more shooting. Maybe he gives you more shooting than Derrick Jones Jr., who got 5 minutes in the game. Maybe instead of playing Whiteside 29 minutes and Olynyk 21 minutes and Bam Adebayo 15 minutes, maybe you go small. Go small and give Wayne Ellington some minutes because he needs some minutes. And especially when you're down 20, you need a guy who can just get hot and score in bunches. And right now, look, Miami goes sort of small. The closest thing to their small ball lineup is when they play the three young guys, the kids together. They play Bam Adebayo, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson all together, and usually have Dwayne Wade and Tyler Johnson or Roddy Magruder, two of those three around them. And yeah, defensively, that's exciting. It's cool to have the three young guys in there at the same time. But offensively, they can't score in bunches. That lineup struggles to score points. So why not run Wayne Ellington out there? Why not go super small with Winslow at center? I just don't get it. Every other team in the NBA does it. If you're down by 20, you just go really, really small. You go super small, play a catch-up lineup for a couple minutes. That's all it takes. A couple minutes. try to force the offense to come, try to just get hot all of a sudden, try to just take a bunch of threes, get out in transition and defend that way. I don't know why they didn't do it. It's weird. I don't get it. And when you're Miami and you struggle to get out in transition and you struggle to score consistently, that's a big problem. That's a big problem with Miami not switching, not and playing that more traditional lineup with Kelly Olynyk at power forward and Whiteside at center and basically playing a traditional front court for most of the game. The problem with that is that most teams play so fast that they end up being forced to mismatch anyway. Like after a make, right, the Heat can get back down on defense and then match up, right? You could play Olynyk on the front court guy of your choosing. You play Whiteside on again, you just play Whiteside in the paint, let him camp out in the paint and drop and pick and rolls and let him do that. And then you match up everywhere else. But this team misses a lot of shots. They don't have a go-to scorer. They don't have a guy who is a consistent shot maker. And so the result is that they miss a bunch of shots. That turns into defensive rebounds for the other team. The other team, as many teams do right now, will push the pace, push the ball down the court off of a defensive rebound. And now all of a sudden, if you're Miami, you're left scrambling, playing pickup basketball. All five guys on Miami's defense are just picking up whoever's closest to them. And so you end up just sort of getting switched anyway. So I think if Miami had one elite shot maker, they'd be much better off. But they don't have that, right? They don't have that player. We keep going back to that. They don't have that guy. And if they had that guy, it would clean up a lot of their issues. And I don't know who that guy is. I don't think that guy is going to be Dion Waiters when he comes back. I think that guy could be Josh Richardson, but it's not right now. And unfortunately, Dwayne Wade can't play enough minutes to be that guy. Again, we usually do what went wrong and what went right here. I can't think of anything that went right, so let's just do some Twitter questions, but first we'll pause for a quick break. Let's answer some of your questions that you sent in on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This first one comes from Billy, who asks, where are the dribble handoffs for three-pointers? I get Ellington hasn't played, which he should be over Jones Jr. or Tyler Johnson, but why aren't we running the dribble handoff? Richardson, Wade, Magruder, Dragic, Tyler Johnson could all be getting up quality threes and instead are forcing shots. The Heat have taken a lot more off the dribble shots this year, and I think that's where the dribble handoffs are going. And I hadn't really thought about this until Billy brought it up, so I looked it up going into this game. So this does not include the stats from the Charlotte game. Those weren't uploaded to NBA.com by the time I went back and looked, but going into the Charlotte game, the Heat were on pace to run 590 dribble handoffs this season. Sounds like a lot, right? But they ran 932 last season. So they are currently on pace to basically run a little bit more than half as many dribble handoffs as they did last year. That's not good. I think the dribble handoff was a really good weapon for them. Tonight, in fact, was the first time we saw from Kelly Olynyk the fake dribble handoffs. The time where he goes on the elbow, fakes the dribble handoffs, turns around and darts back towards the rim and either lays it up or dunks it. That was the first time we saw it. We saw it so many times last season. First time we saw it tonight. And it took, what was this, Miami's seventh game? Yeah, it took seven games to get there. So I don't know what happened to the dribble handoffs. I think I'd have to do a deeper dive on this if I were to guess. Josh Richardson and Goran Dragic, and both of those guys in particular. Oh, and Dwayne Wade, too. Taking more off the dribble pull-up shots. I think that has something to do with it. They reject a lot of the screens that could eventually turn into dribble handoffs and things like that. Miami seemingly trying to get into their offense faster. The dribble handoff can be a fast-paced way to play offense, but it does seem like they're just sort of throwing the ball down the court and just trying to get into their offense right away. A lot of off-ball action instead of on-ball action is another reason. And then the other thing is that Kelly Olynyk is mostly playing the four, mostly playing as a floor spacer next to Hassan Whiteside, where a lot of the dribble handoffs last year came from Kelly Olynyk and came from Kelly Olynyk playing center. So I think that's part of it too, is less minutes for center, or less minutes for Kelly Olynyk at center. I think that has an impact. So all those things combined result in fewer dribble handoffs. Our next question comes from Jeff, who writes in, I feel like a healthy James Johnson will free up more Kelly Olynyk at the five lineups, as well as more two-guard lineups with Winslow at the three, could solve a couple of problems regarding spacing and defense. Yeah, I think that's true. I think we came into the season, David and I, talking about how we think Justice Winslow is primarily a three at this point. We've talked a lot about, is Winslow a point guard? Is he a small ball four? No, I think he's just a small forward who needs to basically be a 3-and-D guy. He's been sort of forced into this spot of playing the stretch four behind Kelly Olynyk. He's been good at it this year, but it would be better to have him on the perimeter, especially add some size, especially if you play him next to James Johnson. Winslow's been a decent three-point shooter this season. The stroke looks pretty good. I think you can play him next to James Johnson. And then just having James Johnson there to set screens and do all the little things that he does, get rebounds, it makes playing Kelly Olynyk at the five better, because that's not necessarily a thing that Olynyk wants to do as far as just getting rebounds. And he's more of a floor spacer, not a guy that's going to get into the paint and kind of get into the weeds there. So yeah, look, James Johnson and Kelly Olynyk played well together last year. I think they'll play well together this year. Having JJ back, I said it going into this game, I think the Heat were going to miss James Johnson the most out of any game so far this season, tonight versus Charlotte, and that looked to be the case. So James Johnson coming back should help him having that ability to bring the ball down the floor, get into isolation, create shots for others, get to the rim. I think it'll help everything. I think the Heat, out of all the guys that they have missed this season due to injury, Ellington, Waiters, James Johnson, I think they've missed James Johnson the most. I think we got time for one more. Yeah, we got time for one more. This one comes from Frank, who writes in, "You think if Goran Dragic and Whiteside opt out this summer, Riley re-signs them, and how much do we pay Magruder? Are you guys finally going to admit that Deion, James Johnson, Tyler contracts were terrible, as it didn't raise our ceiling, and we are still average?" This is a really good question, actually. I don't know how much, as far as the finally admitting stuff, I thought we were all on the same page with that, man. I thought we were all good. Like, Tyler Johnson, that was a bad contract. Tyler Johnson, the player, fine. He could be good sometimes, and sometimes he's not. Join the club. That's most NBA players. Contract's really bad. I thought we were all in agreement with that. This is actually a longer question that I want to save for our mailbag. So that's a tease. We'll tease that for next Monday's mailbag. How's that? Because I think David's going to want to chew into that as well. Mark asks, let's do this one instead, and then we'll wrap up here. Mark asks, "Do you guys still think we need to trade Hassan Whiteside? I think he's been decent this season." Look, I think Bam Adebayo is shown to still be pretty raw, even though he's got a ton of potential. Kelly Olynyk has been fine at the four, and that Olynyk-Whiteside lineup has actually been pretty good for Miami for the most part. But yeah, I do think that they need to trade Whiteside still. There's nothing against Whiteside. I think they need to trade him more because he's been decent this year. He has been a good player. He's been arguably one of Miami's best players this year. I put him right up there with Rodney Magruder for the most part. But the better he plays, the more value he has on the trade block. And yeah, I think the Heat, if you're going to be a forward-looking team, and you kind of hope that they would be, because it's pretty clear that they're not the contender right now, so the only other option is to look forward. Yeah, I think they got to trade Whiteside, especially the better he plays, the more you might want to sell high on Hassan Whiteside. If there is a taker out there, I think you gotta be open to shopping him. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And of course, make sure to hit that subscribe button on iTunes or whatever you use to listen to podcasts and leave us a rating or review while you're there. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time.